Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Through that, didn't we? We got through that. Not pleasant. It was what's the word? Nasty. We saw a bad hombre on display last night at the pageant in Las Vegas, and. Yeah, I felt like I needed a shower with bleach after we were done. But God, in her own sort of reserved way, after a while it just looked like Hillary Clinton was standing there cutting Donald Trump just to watch him bleed. Well, I killed a man in Vegas. Yes, Labor Man, you're absolutely right. Labor Man in the chat room noting, Bob, what you saw was a jagoff. Yes, he is. And yes, he was. This is the horn for Thursday, the 20th day of October, 2016. If you'd like to be part of the multimedia real-time madcap zany extravaganza, just bebop right over to headonradionetwork.com and click on chat room and pick yourself out a screen name and a password where you and jump. You'll be right in there, and you will be happily met by the likes of Jug of Punch and Labor Man and Will in Chicago and Tim from L.A. and all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, having survived last night, has folded space once again, being a third stage guild navigator, to become Man Cave. Yes. I guess the best thing we can say about last night is it was the last one. And now we've got 19 days. 19 days more of this. And what? Oh, yeah, let me get this out of the way real quick because hopefully it will not. Hopefully it'll get relieved. Thanks to everybody who kept the fundraising hole from being deeper than it is. Our fundraising goal for this evening is $438.89. Glenn's 11 cents change last night persists, yea, verily, unto this moment. $438.89. And, it would be great not to have a $638.89 fundraising goal tomorrow. So if we can take a bite out of that, it would be nothing short of wonderful. Even miraculous if we could knock down all of that. Paid another bill today. Right. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. You dropped the ball on that again, Tim. You're slacking, buddy. But I am. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is the horn for the 20th day of October 2016. If you want to help keep things going, just run over to headonradionetwork.com, click on contribute. We always need new subscribers because we're still trying to get to the day when we've got 400 of them, and I don't have to do any of this anymore. I mean, not the program part, but the fundraising part. Because if we had 400 $10 a month subscribers, it would just take care of itself. But we don't, and we don't even have 100. So let's just click that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, and you'll be well on your way. Other than that, just fill out the forms, fill out the fields, leave the ones blank about what you're doing, where you do it, who you do it to. Get to the next screen where you make your choice between proceed with PayPal and proceed with credit card, and you'll be right in. And we'll be helping keep independent media going as it has been going for almost 11 continuous years now. It's anniversary week here at the Horn. We will be 11 years old on Monday, the 24th day of October 2016. And it is a real hope of mine that we don't go into More and Monday with a giant screaming deficit. So, $438.89 is the fundraising goal this evening. And if nothing happens, it'll be $638.89 tomorrow. All right. Well, welcome home. Carol Baker says, you're on and I'm home. All at the same time. What are the chances? She said, I skipped the debate and watched a documentary on the Hindenburg. What were the chances we both watched a gas bag go down in flames? Yeah, the thing is, only the one you were watching, somebody yelled, oh, the humanity. There was no humanity going down in flames last night, Carol. So I think you had the better of the two experiences. Because I damn sure didn't. And by the way, just by way of a sort of post-mortem on the whole thing, Chris Wallace turned out to be the best of the debate moderators. Granted, that is a very, very low bar. Someday they'll wise up and let Amy Goodman moderate one of those things, and then we'll find out some stuff. But not this year. No. I guess she's just too denigrous for the for-profit media. Yeah, Chris Wallace is the best of the moderators in the four that were scheduled, and that's not saying very much really at all. But he maintained something closer to control over Pumpkin Spice Hitler and. You know, it was almost like the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini had, instead of snorting the gross national product of Peru right before the debate started, that in fact he'd been hit with some mellowing agent. Yeah. Tim from L.A., I guess you missed it. The Hitler pool is turned off with regard to any references to Pumpkin Spice Hitler. Okay, that doesn't count. Other mentions do, but that doesn't. Just so you know. Now, Chris Wallace. The topics he chose were topics, I guess, that would be really appreciated by the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda crowd with which he is usually most familiar. But I knew that we were in for a bit of a bullshit fest when he asked the first question. Because the first question, right out of the gate, was, I want to ask you about the Constitution, and I want to ask you about how you'll go about selecting Supreme Court nominees. But the way he couched it, was by asking, is the Constitution a living document, or did the framers of the Constitution mean what they said? This is what is referred to formally as a bullshit false dichotomy. Because it can be both. Because it is both. There is not some split between whether the Constitution evolves with the society that it underpins, or is or whether the framers meant what they said. Because the framers put in an amendment process whereby the Constitution could be changed. Had they meant for the Constitution to remain a static document for all time, unable to respond to the needs of a growing and changing country, there would be no amendment process. But it is the very amendment process that makes the Constitution a living document. What the question basically did was to prop up the discredited bullshit argument most frequently and constantly and effectively, I guess, promulgated by fat dead Tony Scalia. And it's a hypocritical doctrine. It has meaning only when its proponents decide it needs to have meaning. And constitutional originalism says that if it didn't exist at the time of the framers, and then we cannot presume that the framers thought about it, and therefore. But it only applies to things that they want it to apply to. It, like I said, it's a selective doctrine of mass hypocrisy. Because the framers cannot possibly have had an original intent to build, say, a national system of limited access highways, the interstates, because then they certainly couldn't have intended for cars to drive on them. Because there was no car and no concrete or, heavy-duty asphalt road. And of course, the framers' intent is most often on display in regard to guns and, of course, the precious little fetuses. Because the framers didn't want no abortions. Or so they say. But when I heard that question, I knew that we were in for a ride. Once again, there was another reference to, what is it, the Pete Peterson outfit? The Center for Responsible Budget Priorities and Cat Food. And anytime that thing gets referenced, that outfit gets referenced, you know that the fix is in with the jerk asking the question. And so naturally it was right there. How are you going to keep Social Security from becoming insolvent? Because it's going to become insolvent. It has to die. It's collapsing under its own terrible weight. Only it's not. You know? I mean, as in not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to... Oh, what is the name? Because we really should know the actual, we should be cognizant of the actual name of the outfit so that your little bullshit alarms can go off any time that you hear it. Because these are, you know, these are people. This outfit, the Center for a Responsible Federal Budget, Center for a Responsible Federal Budget. Anytime you hear that, you know that somebody is trying to do some top notch granny starving. But of course, there is if they're still listening. There is within this little community a contingent of people for whom anything positive about Madam Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton is just proof of insufficient progressive credentials. But the fact of the matter is, one of the things that we worried about over the course of the primary season was that clip of Hillary Clinton saying that she could negotiate away portions of a woman's right to choose. She did not directly negate that last night, but she came close, because she did offer up a pretty thorough defense of Roe versus Wade. And then, like I said, because after a while, I think she was just nicking Trump with little cuts to watch him bleed orange. She'd say things like, "I don't believe the government needs to be in the lives of people making these most personal of decisions," thereby, you know, blowing a little bit of a tune on the dog whistle to the people who want small government and get the government off our backs. Yeah. I heard it. I'm pretty sure you did too. Her advancement of the no-fly zone idea in Syria. Yeah, I'm still not crazy about that one. I'm not a fan, because that smells an awful lot of like wanting to go toe to toe with the Ruskies, which I don't want to do. We don't need any more wars. We don't need to be in any more wars that we don't have to be in. And there's just a little too much opportunity for casus belli that could arise in such a situation. But you don't go into the election with the candidate you want. You go into the election with the candidate you have. And we've got either Hillary Clinton or Trumple Thinskin. Sorry. Just do. So, later in the program, if you wish, I'm certainly game for discussing your thoughts on the pageant. God, when it was over, and before it started, all the, will they shake hands? Will they?
Make them shake hands, Mommy.
Oh, no. And then when it ended, there were no handshakes there either. And somewhere along the way, there was that seminal moment in which he said, in which he, Trump, Benito Cheeto, said that we would all have to wait and see if he would accept the outcome of the election. Aye. And then in the after party, Kellyanne Conway dropped by CNN long enough to say, well, of course he's going to accept the outcome of the election because he's going to win. And then proceeded to run as hard as she could to get away from the question about, yeah, and if he loses? But he said, "I'm going to keep you in suspense. I'm going to keep you waiting. I want a suspense." And then, because it's what I had, because I was watching online, I watched the CNN after party, where various pro-Trump troglodytes, including, I didn't realize that Tommy Lahren from The Blaze has a twin over at CNN, but she apparently does. And they all declared that it was okay for Trump to say that he would wait about accepting the outcome of the election because Gore. Which was, you know, another one of those moments. You know, the, go and get me a peanut butter and banana sandwich, boy, and bring me the Elvis gun. I'm going to shoot the TV screen, or in this case, the monitor. Because, of course, no one on that panel could seem to recall that the nature of the Supreme Court challenge that was leveled was brought by George W. Bush and not Al Gore. Bush v. Gore. Remember? In which were contained the pleadings, petitioner Bush alleges that if the writ does not issue, he will suffer irreparable harm. But somehow, because Gore. Yeah. Bush. But that, you know, the Bush v. Gore thing does make things a little bit tricky, if you know what I mean. Especially in light of the fact that it was, you know, Bush who brought the suit. Petitioner Bush alleges that he will be irreparably harmed if all the votes are counted. And the fact that, you know, Florida had an automatic recount provision it had to happen. But all in all, the happiest thing we can say is that the debates are mercifully over, that there remain 18 days plus the rest of this one between now and the election, that even for the Jill people and the people who feel the Johnson, this will be a better country, or we will have at least bought ourselves time in a way sort of similar to the stumbling along of the Byzantine Empire of the about the 1000 CE era. We will have bought ourselves another 4 years as an empire. After that, who knows? Après la déluge. Right? So, you know, we can certainly talk about all of that when the time comes, when the lines are open and everything. It is, of course, Thorn in the Side Thursday, which is reserved for especially just stultifying moments of right-wing thought. Marty says, yeah, 18 days plus the rest of this one to cement the plan to get out to international waters. Right, right. But we've got some, we've got some Titanic intellect out there. I mean, you can't call it anything but Titanic intellect when you've got a Republican politician in Kansas doing things like, well, let me read you the quote, okay? Because you'll just love this. And we'll play a game of who said it. The receptivity of the masses is very limited. Their intelligence is small, but their power of forgetting is enormous. In consequence of these facts, all effective propaganda must be limited to a very few points and must harp on these in slogans until the last member of the public understands what you want him to understand by your slogan. This quote was cited with great approval by Kansas House Speaker Pro Tem Peggy Mast. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't a link, and then, okay, so, then Link, about an hour later, shared a post from an evangelical Christianist blog, and it was of an activist by the name of Gianna, G-I-A-N-N-A, Jessen, testifying at a congressional hearing about Planned Parenthood. And, of course, Gianna Jessen gets all worked up about the precious little fetuses. She's one of those people who wants the government meddling in women's uteri. Uteruses. And so, yeah, because it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. What Peggy Mast actually said was, great quote from Hitler in the video. Now, see, that counts. 6:28 p.m. Who had 6:28 p.m.? Damn it, Gerald! Great quote from Hitler in the video. Please listen to it closely. His words are profound. Let's start using discernment. One presumes that Republican there, Ms. Mast, a Republican from Emporia, Kansas, I guess we can presume that she understands messaging to her fellow Republicans. And she sure does like her some Hitler quoting. The Speaker of the Kansas House was appalled, to her credit, noting, I can't imagine how anything, how you could say any quote from Hitler was great. Not good, not perceptive, not, well, you know, he was an awful human being and he killed 11 million people, more than half of whom were Jews, and but you know, he understood the nature of propaganda. You I guess you could say something like that and not sound like a total asshole. But great quote from Hitler. I'm not so sure. No. But, you know, what do you want? Oh, meanwhile, Garrison Keillor has... We'll stay out in the heartland here for a minute. Garrison Keillor has retired from Prairie Home Companion. I actually heard the new host of Prairie Home Companion last week, and I don't know, maybe he'll smooth out the rough edges and settle in, but it just wasn't quite the same. Sounded like kind of a youngish hipster guy with a mandolin, but it was radio, so I couldn't see the mandolin. Or whether he was a youngish hipster guy. But the reason I mentioned Garrison Keillor is because he wrote something earlier this week suggesting that if he loses, and loses big, and loses huge in New York, Donald Trump should move to Nebraska, where he would be among people with whom he is more like-minded. Now, I looked at that and I thought, well, hell no, not Nebraska. No. Come on down here to almost level West by Coal, Oil, and Gas, Virginia, and you'll fit right in. We'll get you a pair of overalls with those reflective stripes and the going hunting safety orange on them, or the high visibility lemon lime green, and you can come on down, Donald. Because see, Garrison Keillor's argument was that Nebraska has a higher concentration of pro-Trump voters. But West Virginia takes very near to a no backseat at all in terms of Trump loving. And in point of fact, if you want to get away from the liberal elites, this is where you come to. I mean, you don't, because remember, it was years ago now, probably 10 years ago, when the news broke that Mel Gibson had bought a house for his daddy, Hutton Gibson, about 20 miles from where I'm sitting right now, because Hutton Gibson liked the idea of coming to West Virginia because it had so few Jews, and it only had hard-working white people, and I mean, these are Hutton Gibson's words. Everybody knows the Jew don't work, or doesn't work. Hutton Gibson being an unreconstructed, I presume now dead, anti-Semite. So, hey, kind of hard for me to invite Donald Trump to West Virginia. But, I mean, because we've already got pretty much our own version in Cornpone, in the form of Jim Kunta Kinte Justice, who is running for the office of governor here, and actually probably has more cash liquidly at hand than Donald Trump by maybe a factor of two or three. Yeah. I mean, in the last debate, Jim Justice talked about how they talk on the phone and his family is friends with their family, and it was pretty disgusting for a guy who is the Democratic nominee. No, Brother Deacon Asa, I did not finish the 1.75 gallon industrial strength drum of Cuervo. To be honest, my heart wasn't in it. I just felt like I I didn't feel like I. No, wasn't there for me. Nope. Hey, thanks going out. As we get started on trying to fill in the hole here in this anniversary week. Thanks going out to our dear friend Will in Chicago. The fundraising hole is now, or the fundraising amount is now $432.89. Thank you, Will. Thank you very, very kindly. Yeah, that's true. Jim points out with regard to propaganda in the Third Reich, Dr. Goebbels, too. Yep. But, you know, they are, well, that's that famous football coaching quote from Denny Green. They were who we thought they were. Yeah. Outrage all around the country today over the vote rigging business. Scott in San Diego says, I mailed in my California ballot on Monday, but if someone who is better at Photoshop than me comes up with an I rigged sticker, I'd still wear one proudly. See if you can get Billable Rick on this right away. I rigged. Nasty woman. Nasty woman. That came after she referred to, she said that's because Vladimir Putin would rather have a puppet in the White House, to which Demosthenes, like Trump, replied, no puppet, no puppet, you're the puppet! Oh, damn it, Carol, warn a guy. I've got a visual here for Bad Hombre Eau de Toilette, showing a shirtless Donald Trump riding on a horse behind a shirtless Vladimir Putin. For those times when just acting like a dick isn't enough, now you can smell like one. Bad Hombre by Trump Fragrances. Oh, the stupid. Bad Hombre Bad Hombre trended all over the Twitter sphere. I think there was a one meme from that I saw from what the Steve Martin Short vehicle, the Three Amigos. Chevy Chase, too, right? That was Chevy Chase, Martin Short, and Steve Martin. So, where do you want to take it this evening? I mean, I'm up for a number of, well, just about any conversation you want to engage in. I've got some stuff of my own. I'm sick to death of presidential politics. I'm sure you can imagine why. But being as how it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, let's take a moment and have a merry little chuckle over the punking of right-wing outrage media again. In this case, it was Well, there's a guy out there named Joey Salads. And he makes some kind of, some rather sketchy parody videos that he puts out as news. And in these videos, he sets them up to serve as bias confirmation for right-wing bigotry. So in this particular case, it was a video of a car with Trump stickers on it, which a group of scary black people approach and then beat the hell out of, breaking glass, bashing in windows, you know, ball batting, that kind of thing. Yeah, just a thorough vandalization job. And you see it and you go, oh my goodness! And over in right-wing hate media, the people like the Gateway pundit Jim Hoft says, oh my stars and garters! He wrote, they parked a car with Trump stickers in a black neighborhood to see what happens. It took 30 minutes before the Democrats started looting the car and beating out the windows. Matt Drudge picked it up and ran with it with a lot of breathless OMG-ing. Wingnut Daily picked it up. Western Journalism picked it up. Yeah. Three times this week. The Drudge and Hoff, the Gateway pundit, and other white wingers have been punked and suckered in on fake stories. They fell for a gag on Twitter by a guy named @RandyGDoug. He tweeted, I love working at the post office in Columbus, Ohio, and ripping up absentee ballots that vote for Trump. immediately set off alarms at Drudge and over there with the oxymoron Flush Flimball. They were absolutely certain that this was proof that the election was being rigged in Hillary's favor. They went wild over a joke photo of a guy holding 7 driver's licenses and saying, new fakes are in, ready to make Hillary president. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, what do you expect? They're just that good. Determined journalists trying to protect the integrity of our electoral process. You know, except when they're not. Except when their legislatures are passing laws to try to keep people from voting, and in the case of North Carolina, admitting that the entire purpose was to keep a particular group of people, namely black people, from voting. Yeah, right. And so we got that. But it's hard to get away from one nasty little fact, and that is that we somehow managed to have yet another presidential debate without talking about climate change. or environmental issues generally. And this would have been a good week to talk about it. You've got the opposition to the Dakota Access Pipeline and the water protectors from the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and their allies. That would have made a good question. But then, of course, Donald Trump would have Donald Trump probably would have said something disparaging about Native Americans. And, well, Chris Wallace couldn't have that, because most of his job last night seemed to be to normalize Trump even further. In advance of the debate, the editorial board of Bloomberg News said that silence, quote, on one of the most momentous and difficult issues facing their nation and the world is difficult to comprehend and harder to justify. Chris Wallace should make room for climate change in the discussion. Chris Wallace had no intention of doing so because, frankly, Chris Wallace doesn't give a damn about climate change. He's got his. Igumfu, you know? There was a heartbreaking story out of Nebraska relating to a pipeline. This one was carrying anhydrous ammonia. A farmer recognized that there was something wrong, and he went to investigate. And before he could get away from the pipeline leak, he had been overcome by the vapors, and he died. He was killed by a leaking pipeline. Ah, it's just one guy, right? No, it's not just one guy. It's one guy and his family and his community that will no longer have him in it. I don't know how the guy voted. I don't care. I don't know if he was pro-pipeline or anti-pipeline. I don't know if he was getting paid for the pipeline to be able to run across his land, or if they took it by eminent domain and then just paid him, you know, whatever the court said was fair. All I know is he's dead. And he was killed by a leaking pipeline. Because, you know, when you spend money on things like pipeline safety, that's money you're not making and paying to the, you know, the hoity-toities at the top of the pyramid scheme. And then, yes, what we mentioned last night, I mentioned in conversation with Todd, the coal ash disaster on the News River in North Carolina, not far from Goldsboro, where even the trees have been turned white by a coating of coal ash, which sort of indicates that something horrible probably happened during the Hurricane Matthew. Somehow or another, though, we had time to talk about entitlements last night, but not the poisoning of various portions and segments of both country and population. Turns out that if you live in the Jordan Downs public housing complex in Watts in L.A., chances are you're being poisoned there. It's built on and near a toxic waste site. Yeah, an old steel mill and steel processing plant and truck mechanic operation with massive concentrations of lead, arsenic, cadmium in the soil, in which on which the public housing complex is built. Yeah. The L.A. Human Right to Housing Collective has been investigating since at least 2012. And, it turns out at the time they purchased the land in 2008, the housing authority there in L.A., there were still old fuel, oil, and gasoline storage tanks all over the property. And oil had been spilled all over the place. Hakla spent $31 million to buy the factory site. Full environmental testing of the soil would have cost about $10,000. They didn't spend it. Underneath the ground there are two plumes of contaminated water. One of them is contaminated by gasoline, and it is allegedly being cleaned up by ExxonMobil, but the other is an orphan plume. No responsible party's been identified, and so it's just sitting there poisoning the underground. So the activists had to do the testing themselves. They used an X-ray fluorescence spectrometer to do soil testing at 104 spots in the Jordan Downs public housing neighborhood. All 104 tested spots came back with very high levels of lead. Half of them over 80 parts per million. About a third of them over 100 parts per million. One sample at 346 parts per million. 80 parts per million is the threshold at which the state of California says one should be concerned about lead poisoning. Yeah, Carol, you're probably right. Oh, for fuck's sake, Bob, no one cares if we thin the herd when it comes to the wrong coloreds and the poors. It ain't Beverly Hills, baby. Nope, it's not. Cadmium, mercury, antimony, arsenic. And, you know, poor people. All those things are in coal ash, too, by the way. No word yet on when or if or how a cleanup will be attempted on the News River in North Carolina. Haven't seen any responses from the pipeline company after they killed a man in Nebraska, either. But starting with the debates in 2012, there has been no question about climate change in any presidential debate. Two weeks ago, Paul Krugman in the New York Times said that continuing to ignore climate change would be, quote, almost criminally irresponsible. Yeah. If there's a conspiracy to be had, that's the one that feels like a conspiracy. Lester Holt came from NBC. Martha Raddatz came from CBS, I think. Anderson Cooper from Chicken Noodle News, of course. Chris Wallace from Fox. And I forget where Elaine Quijano came from. But they're all separate organizations. They've all got their own internal structures. They've all got their own agendas. And yet somehow they all managed to come to the conclusion that climate change was not worth discussing in a presidential debate. I mean, is that a little weird to you? Is that a little more than... Damn, it feels like it's a lot more than coincidental. Ah, thanks, Scott. Elaine Quijano is at CBS News, or CBSN. I recognize my own biases, and I recognize my own bubble, and maybe I pay attention to these things a little bit more than some others. But how does one utterly ignore an issue that is undeniable? Well, I don't know. Maybe Chris Wallace. Maybe. Really, Anderson Cooper is Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper is a climate science denier. Elaine Quijano is a climate science denier. Martha Raddatz and Lester Holt are climate science deniers. I find that difficult to credit. So why? Why was the entire subject of the environment, you know, in which we humans have to live, completely ignored? And why has it been ignored since 2012? Why was the last climate change question asked in 2008? Are they afraid the right wing will call them, you know, names or something? Yeah, I know. Asa says, so what if the water table's contaminated with lead? It's only a couple of IQ points, Bob. Famously remarked in Michigan, if I recall correctly. I mean, we're not that far removed from the poisoning of 300,000 people in West Virginia a couple of years back, 2.5 years back now. That case is still going on, thanks to the he's going to get a Pulitzer one of these days reporting of Ken Ward. We know, for instance, that Eastman Chemical, who manufactured the methyl cyclohexane methanol, if it's good enough to clean coal, it's good enough for me, said the West Virginia Coal Association at the time of the disaster. Eastman Chemical destroyed a load of MCHM that was meant to be shipped to Freedom Industries. And, of course, that prevented their... that prevented effective testing from being done on the crude substance. Kevin Thompson represents the residents and businesses in a lawsuit in U.S. District Court. And according to his pleadings, Eastman Chemical, quote, destroyed the last best evidence of the chemical previously stored in the tank that failed. Uh-huh. Because they're suing Eastman Chemical, and the lawyer wants sanctions against Eastman Chemical for spoliation of the evidence. But water in Flint, water in West Virginia, poison in Flint, poison in West Virginia, coal ash dump disaster events on the Clinch River, on the News River, and various and sundry others. Children poisoned by breathing fracking fumes. None of this, not a damn bit of it, makes it into a presidential debate. But we can, of course, talk about whether the pores, the old pores, need a righteous screwing from Pete Peterson's outfit. Yeah, thanks for nothing, Chris Wallace. Thanks for nothing. Yeah. All right, let's take a break. Like I said, we've got $432.89 to raise for to keep the program on the air. Yeah, emails coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Coal ash? We don't have no stinking coal ash. As far as the coal ash pits overflowing into the News River, Duke Energy says that the amount of overflow could fit into the bed of a pickup truck, and it was the non-toxic material. That from the former employer of Grin and Pat McCrory. Non-toxic coal ash. Because that's a real thing. Not so much. Nothing to see here. This is not the coal ash you were looking for. Jack in Shreveport says, Hillary's been treading water or pandering for right-wing votes, so bringing up climate change would only lose right-wingers. She's already got the people on the left. Trump had no reason to bring it up. He would have to say it's a hoax on the national stage. The media wants energy company ads, so there you go. Nobody wealthy wants to talk about it. I read an article in the New York Times the other day about some rich loon up east. He's a Republican, but he's an environmentalist. And he believes in climate change. He thinks climate change is real, but he is a first-rate Trumpansy, and he doesn't think the government needs to do anything about climate change, even though it's real. The market needs to handle it. Don't need no job-killing regulations. Sheesh. You know? Marty says, speaking of Lester Holt, did you hear the story of the morons who sent angry tweets to Chicago Cubs pitcher John Lester, thinking he was Lester Holt? As we keep saying, says Marty, the stupid is strong with these people. Strong indeed. All right, we'll take a break. Thanks, Ralphs. Ralphs just jumped in and saved me the ciphering. We are now down to $400 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thank you very kindly. Ralphs, thank you very much indeed for that $32.89. Yay. I don't know if we've had loose change lay around in the fundraising goal for as long as that one did last night. Thank you very much indeed, Ralphs. So, you know how to reach the program if you want to engage in some conversation. The stress line is 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. The other line, which we just call the other line, is 304-574-8178. And then, of course, from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. And any of them will get you through to the program. I look forward to the conversation. Maybe you've got something far more interesting than anything I brought up thus far. Let's find out. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. of hard to resist that. 10 minutes past the hour. Long distance dedication going out to Chris Wallace there at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda from all of us here at the Horn. Yep. By the way, Tim pointing out that you're not necessarily even safe in Beverly Hills, because Beverly Hills High School, their athletic fields sit right next to a working oil patch. And people have been sickened and died, they believe, from exposure to the toxins therein and thereat. Yep. Let's run over and check in with Laurel in the far reaches of Southwest Minnesota. Good evening, Laurel, and good evening to LT. Laurel. Hello? You're on the air. No? Nothing? In the far reaches of Southwest Minnesota.
Wow, there's some delay.
Good evening to LT.
Good evening, Bob. LT says hi. When he gets around to it, he'll say hi.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've been... Oh, hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I do now, but whatever it is you're listening to, you've got to turn down.
Hello?
Yeah, you're there.
Can you hear me? Oh. Not muted. Okay.
Okay, good, but whatever it is you're listening to, you've got to turn down.
I'll try again. Try again.
No, you're there. Oi. You're on. You're on.
Hello? Hello? Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, I do now, but whatever it is you're listening to, you've got to turn down.
Okay. Oh, I'm on your radio. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to have to battle myself now, ain't I?
Okay, good. But whatever it is you're listening to, you've got to turn down.
Okay. Oh, shoot. Let me...
No, you're there.
Yeah. If I mute the Skype button... If I mute... Okay. I don't want to mute the Skype because then I'll shut myself off live. It's always fun debating yourself, by the way. I've found those are the most instructive debates I ever have.
I usually lose.
Yes, LT's debating himself, too. Okay. I don't want to shut this off without losing the Skype, though. Okay. Let me. Yeah. If I mute the Skype button. This is making excellent radio, isn't it? Let me try again here.
Okay. In the meantime, we will run over to the stress line where I think we've got Todd. Is that you, Todd?
Hey, Bob. Yeah. I just want to. I don't talk to you yesterday. I'm not going to.
That's okay. It's fine. Neighborly.
But anyway, I didn't know it was anniversary week. Happy anniversary.
Well, thank you.
Will the day fall on, in the week proper?
Yeah, Monday.
Wow.
11 years old on Monday and a total of 12 plus years back in the broadcasting gig.
Wow. Well, America's a better place for you, for it. I mean, I have to say that the main reason I called is, I tuned in on time today. You made the most succinct argument I've ever heard about that jackass. I wasn't going to curse, but fuck him. That jackass Scalia. In terms of this made-up shit with this originalist bullshit, okay? And I know I'm being crude now. I should be talking like I'm at work, but fuck that. He was such a disgusting piece of shit. I've told you this before. I think he's one of the three worst people in the past probably 100 years in the world. But
you can certainly imagine him back in 1848 voting in the majority with Chief Justice Taney in the Dred Scott decision, can't you?
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, that's what the originalism of the framers would suggest that, well, you know.
There's so much we could do with that, right? Oh, my God.
It's too far and too deep into the cesspool for an hour and 16 minutes into the program.
And then his snark, he was so...
Oh, he was shitty. He was shitty.
What a dick. I mean, seriously. I mean, you're supposed to respect these people, but what a dick.
Well, okay. You know? Here, let's do that professionally. Hang on.
You dick!
Better?
Thank you, Spicoli.
You know... And I like on C-SPAN, you know, they started carrying the, you could hear the oral arguments. So right before he died, University of Texas, that decision, you could hear it. And he was like, well, if the blacks can't make it, I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, if the colored people can't, make the grade at University of Texas, maybe they don't feel comfortable. Maybe they should go to the black schools. So, you know, that combined with him having the gall to talk about Sotomayor being an activist judge, you know, when she was being nominated through the process. Well, we don't know. She might be a little too active. Like, well, what the fuck are you? What the fuck are you? You're a weirdo. You made up shit. You're not even going by precedent. Ugh, disgusting.
I know.
So this is my question, though. Now that he has started this nonsense and people believe it and they're parroting this, no offense to Scott's bird, has he set precedent with this nonsense?
It's a real thing. It's a movement. I mean, the Federalist Society prays toward his tomb every day and prays for more originalist judges.
Yeah. I don't.
And
it really
needs to be stamped out as utterly discredited for the giant hoax and intellectual fraud that it is.
That's it, Bob. I'm telling you. I'm writing down. I'm gonna go back to the show tonight because you, like I said, that argument you made was so succinct. You said it in four sentences. You explained what nonsense that. That is,
it all started with that first bullshit question that Chris Wallace asked last night. is the Constitution? I mean, I had and maybe it doesn't do what it does to me to other people. I'm pretty sure that if Dr. Bill heard that last night, he went and kicked furniture for a while. Is the Constitution a living document? Or did the framers mean what they wrote?
Yeah, see that.
I mean, what kind of goddamn intellectual laziness is that? Well, it's the Fox that, kind. I mean, but you know.
You know, right? But you know, honestly, Chris, now I have to admit. Now you know me. I love listening to both sides, all sides, and I listen to the Sunday morning programs via C-SPAN because there are no commercials. You know, you can't see it. I don't know. I listen on the radio, so there's no commercials. But anyway, he has been, in the past few years, he's been pretty fair. I have to say this. For Fox News, he hasn't been that. He's almost as fair as, what's the guy on NBC who took over the show with the red hair, who softballs questions?
Oh, Joke Toad?
Yes, right. Because Chris surprises me sometimes. You know, like most of the time, you know where he is, but I'm just saying. But, you know, I think he's a little bit slow. Just a little bit. I don't know. Like maybe he had one too many blonde hits at the wrong time or something. I don't know. Just be in that position. You know, I'm often very critical. But that's the sense I get. But you know, that you don't start off with a question like that. That's a treatise. What the hell is that shit? You don't ask a question like that. What the fuck is he? What is he thinking about?
Well, what he was doing was he was propagandizing. You can ask the question. What are you, because the question went on. That was just a clause in front of the question. The question went on to be, what kind of criteria are you going to have for appointing Supreme Court justices? And what about the precious little fetuses? And, you know, late-term abortion, which is another one of those things, Todd, that drives me through the damn roof. Okay? None of these fulminating assholes have ever dealt with a situation where a late-term abortion is either considered or recommended. Okay? Instead, right, they just pornographically, intellectually masturbate over it because it gets them off thinking about it. And I don't know why. My mind doesn't work that way. But when a woman, and Hillary tried, I give credit where credit is due. In as short a space as possible, she tried to explain that a late-term abortion happens because something has gone desperately wrong in a pregnancy. Okay, but the right wing wants to create, because they're so obsessed with women's reproductive rights, they want to create this notion that, that there's this welfare queen out there and she's 8.5 months pregnant. And she decides she don't want to have the baby, so she just goes into the abortion mill and they pull the baby out and they stab it in the back of the head with scissors and they kill it. They kill the precious little fetuses, which is just bullshit. It's just a giant, steaming, goddamn mountain-sized mound of bullshit. Sorry, not yelling
at
you.
You sound like me now, Bob. Damn, you sound like me. My God.
And because usually what's happened is the mother's life will be at hazard if she tries to pass the baby. Or if she even tries to have the baby. Or the baby, or the baby will be dead inside her, and they have to induce the labor.
Right.
And it's heartbreaking.
Biologically,
instead, these goddamn right-to-life Republicans are walking around with their hands in their own crotches, digitally manipulating themselves. Ooh, late-term abortion, partial birth abortion. Ooh. And they do it on the floor of the House of Representatives and in the well of the Senate. And presidential campaigns, their presidential candidates do it out on the hustings. Ooh, partial birth abortion. Ugh.
Like it's a national crisis. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's disgusting. Because they must really think that women have, it's not just a woman. It's whoever, it's a family. It's your person, whoever you're with. It's more than one person, but they act like these women are having a damn abortion party. Like, oh, let's go get drunk and let me have my abortion. We'll go party. You know, what the fuck, man? They're fucking sickos. I've been through that shit. That shit is not fun. That shit is no fucking party. And you hear these people talk about it, like, they're baby killers. Well, you know what? If it's a baby killer, then why doesn't your birthday start 9 months prior to your goddamn birthday? How about that?
Well, I've thought about that, but you really can't pinpoint usually the moment of conception. And I'm kind of glad because I think, if I'm not mistaken, if we did it with me, my birthday would be April Fool's Day. So I can't take that much fucking irony, Todd.
You're making this stuff, man. Stop it.
No. No, I think I was the result. You know, nobody likes to think about their parents having sex. We're all immaculately conceived, and we're all just little religions waiting to be formed. But no, yeah, Mama and Daddy got it on, and I think I was birthday sex on my mother's birthday.
Well, that's a beautiful thing. I think that's a beautiful thing. But yeah,
but her birthday was the last day of March. And so, assuming my dad maybe, like, got home off the 4 to 12 shift at about 1:30 in the morning on the morning of April the 1st, yeah, I'm probably an April Fool's baby. Which would make a hell of a lot of sense, taking everything all together.
Wow. Well, I remember, I could... Well, I'm going to get into that. These people are, and it's such a personal thing. I mean, it's not easy. These people are strange. They're just weirdos. I don't know where to get off with that because it's such a personal decision. And that's the whole thing about America. You're supposed to have freedom, right? They always talk about freedom. As long as they have a gun, they're okay. you know. So the other thing I wanted to just touch on really quickly, maybe you can correct me, but it seems to me that they were allowed out there, out in the West, in the Lakota Territory, to restart that pipeline 20 miles from the lake. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. It is true.
Let me ask you something. See, I have a. This is. You know, once again, I'm trying to take emotion out of it, take the politics out of it. Well, maybe not the politics, but doesn't it seem like maybe people should just take a deep breath and say, well, you know, actually, at one point, it was legislatively proper for us to kill the Indians, move them around, put them on these fucked up reservations, starve them, give them diseases. So maybe if they say they don't want the pipeline, maybe can't we just do something different? I mean, that's civility. Am I off base here?
No, you're not. And Todd, let's remember something too, please. You know, I've said in the past that the Supreme Court gets stuff wrong more often than they get things right, and that's probably a very subjective standard. But consider that the court has in the past ruled that it was okay to steal land from Indians because they weren't Christian.
Yeah, that's nonsense. We're supposed to be devoid of religion here, right? It's not supposed to matter.
But I mean, it's there. You can go and read it.
That is insane.
It's shocking. It's a case from like the 1880s. Long about the time that they were entering that footnote in the Santa Clara versus Union Pacific that said corporations are people too, my friends.
Well, that's my biggest kick now. That's one of the reasons that's the first time I signed on to MoveOn.org is because the Citizens United decision. We have that shit has got to go. I'm sorry. That asshole is dead, and that is a ridiculous verdict. That makes no sense at all. I mean, it defies logic. You know, we can't have that. And then I heard you talking about the Neuse River. And, you know, I was talking about New Bern last night because, you know, I had to take the old people. They wanted to go up there. You know, I try to accommodate them. I'm a caretaker, so when they want to go somewhere, they can't drive. I have to drive. So they're not going to be around that much longer. So I take them where they want to go. So we were out there in New Bern, right? So you have to cross the area. Like I was saying last night, that is an awful, awful thing with this coal ash because that land is unbelievably lush. I mean, these people will not be happy until everything is just messed the fuck up. I mean, at some point, you got to say stop because that shit is like nuclear waste except it's ash.
Oh, no, it's radioactive, too. Did you not know that?
Pardon me?
It's coal ash is radioactive, too.
Oh, well, there you go. No, I didn't know that.
Hell yeah.
Damn.
Because coal's radioactive.
That's the cherry on top, huh?
Yeah.
Good grief. Man. So now, wait a minute. We had the one that burst 2 days ago. I was reading the paper here in Conway is Myrtle Beach, like inland. Right?
Yeah.
And so that one breached. So, you know. I don't know, man. It's,
but God forbid we talk about any of this in a national goddamn presidential debate, right, Todd?
Yeah. And you know what's sad? It's very sad that this is playing out just exactly as the credible meteorologist and scientist said it would. Superstorms, right? A trending curve of impending bad weather. Like last year, the floods we had here, once-in-a-thousand-year flood. Then the same month, 1 year later, we have this hurricane and all these floods in the same place in South Carolina, you know. So,
well, the things like climate change and the sea level rise that goes with it, you know, it's not like you wake up one morning and it's happened. They are both gradual processes, and that's what makes it possible for human beings to pretend it doesn't exist. But what we are witnessing, like with the superstorms and the disappearing, what we're witnessing is the gradual disappearance of the coastline of places like the Gulf Coast of Texas and Louisiana, Alabama and Mississippi and Florida,
yep.
the Atlantic
yep.
coast of Florida, and God
Miami,
knows the Atlantic coast of Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina are you know they're moving inland, and when you poison low country river estuaries like the news, then you've got the sea encroaching inland, and you got poison flowing outward. That's gonna work just real great.
And that's why I brought up, well, you brought it up first, but that's why I want to emphasize about the Neuse River area is that, like, you know, these are just words. We're talking, but to drive through there, I mean, I'm making this point.
That'll make you cry.
You talk about good, you know, like I like to garden, okay? I'm a city guy, but I like the soil. And I know good soil. You smell soil, and it has a certain smell. You can look at it and feel it. And you know what good soil is? It's dark, and it has an earthy smell, and it's full of microbes and biomes, and it's just good, right? So when you destroy that, you're fucked, you know?
Well, I mean, here's my question. Is the ability of people to live in certain parts of the United States without being poisoned to death, isn't that at least nominally on a par with whether or not we're going to ask people to work until they're 90 before they can collect Social Security? I mean, aren't those things at least roughly equivalent?
Not even close, because it won't matter. You can't grow food, or your soil's poisoned and your water's poisoned. I mean, look, come on. I'm being facetious, but yes, you're right. But look. Did we ever think that we'd be paying $1 a gallon for potable water?
Well, no.
See, remember Waterworld. That movie got terrible reviews, but guess what? Maybe he knew what the fuck he was talking about. You know, this is getting people. You know, we're the frogs in the pot. So I'm really believing in this breakaway civilization thing. I think the folks that have the money, that's why they're stealing so much money so fast from the stock market. Because they're either planning on going and maybe they already have some stuff going on in Mars or the moon or whatever. And they're going underground in the Ozarks. They've already got these places set up. Because they know this shit is fucked up. You know,
well, don't you remember what the Bush family did? Toward the end of the Reign of Error, when they went down to, what was it, the border area between Paraguay and Bolivia, and bought a bajillion
right.
acres of pristine land.
Right.
Remember
right.
that?
Self-sustainable, yep. They got everything they need there, yep. Yep. And, you know, that's interesting territory down there, you know, that lower tip. You know, you start getting into southern South America, you know, like you say, the Patagonia area, you know. It's not far from there. Is that, am I right? Am I wrong? What?
Oh, I think we're talking about north a couple of thousand miles.
Oh, a couple thousand. That's a lot. Okay. Well, yeah. I must have misunderstood you. But, yeah, they did. But there could be a lot of reasons for that. So you mean like southern Brazil? Is that what you're talking about? Because it kind of broke up for a minute.
Yeah. There's a border area between Paraguay and Bolivia.
Oh, Paraguay and Bolivia. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, that's the Andes. Okay. That's the lower Andes, actually, well, Bolivia. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, wait a minute. That's where they were actually, oh, my God, that's a terrible story. It's, you know, this is not a conspiracy. I don't know what company it was, but they made it illegal for folks to collect rainwater there. They were taxing the water. They were not even allowing people to collect their own water. And I'm not making this up, you know. So we're in different times, you know. These folks, like you said, they want it all. They want it all, man. There's enough for everybody. There is enough for everyone, and we haven't even gotten onto the vertical gardening thing, which we're probably going to have to do at some point. But, you know, nobody talks about that. But our soils are becoming toxic. And by the way, stay away from cheap white wine. When I say not even cheap, just stay away from white wine, because apparently, unless you're spending like $100 a bottle on white wine, where the way it's grown, there's a lot of lead in the soil. And this is on Mike Papantonio's site, you know, the litigation lawyer. And it's called taintedwine.com. So be careful, because, you know, most people, well, we all the listeners know this, you know, lead builds up in your body. You can't really get rid of
it. Yeah, yeah, so, it's bioaccumulative.
Right. So stay
well,
away.
I'm not a big wine. Well, I'm not a wine drinker at all, really. I mean, once in a very great while, if I'm sitting down to a really, really nice quality hunk of beef, nice and medium rare, like a, you know, like a 2-inch thick ribeye kind of thing. I'll have a big old beefy glass of Pinot Noir. But as white wines go, the white wine that the only white wine I much care about is a German wine called Trockenbeeren Auslese.
Is that a Riesling?
I guess it's more of a dessert wine. It's they leave the grapes on the vine until the first frost, and the grapes are picked at the instant of the first frost, at which point they're almost raisins.
Oh, wow.
And it is sweet and fruity and just it just explodes across your palate. Of course, it's not at all dry. I mean, it's a sweet wine. But to have a little glass of that with dessert, oh, stop it. It's pretty pricey. I've still got a bottle I'm hanging on to from, God, probably 2014 in D.C. that I've found there. And I've just, you know, let it sit. Waiting for the perfect moment.
That sounds wonderful. Hey, do you guys get Thomas Creek beer where you are?
No, I've never heard of that.
Oh, it's out of Greenville, South Carolina. They have a really good Pilsner. Because I've been listening to the types of beer that you like. You said you like the Kolsch.
Yeah, and so. I've been every once in a while I'll have a glass over at Secret Sandwich of they'll have a keg of Sierra Nevada Nooner. And it's a pils. It's a German style pils, and it's quite enjoyable.
Yeah, I think, you know what, they have a brewery over in Nashville now.
Sierra Nevada and Oscar Blues are both brewing in North Carolina.
Well, you know, have you had the original, the Czech Bar, it's called Czech Bar. It's the original Budweiser.
Yes, I have.
That is the perfect, it's like what beer is, just normal, regular.
Why do you think I want to go to the beer spa? they submerge you in 110 degree beer, and then they hand you an ice cold glass of, you know, Czech Var or Pilsner Urquell or, you know, any
I remember my first Pilsner Urquell. I was like, oh, this is all right. I heard you say that. You know, hops are not a depression, but they make you drowsy, sleepy. That's why when you drink beer, sometimes you get a sleepy drunk. And it has a hop pillow, you know, a hop-infused pillow.
Dream dreams and have visions, yep.
Well, hey, man, thanks for taking my call. And I just, once again, that argument you made about Scalia's faulty logic, and it's so sad. That is pathetic. You know, it's just, ugh. It just really upsets me, and well, we'll see what happens. I just hope his whole legacy will be debunked. I really do. And maybe you can get the caller in from Minnesota or wherever that was.
Oh, Laurel, yeah, we're going to try again with Laurel here in a minute. Todd, awfully good to hear from you, my friend. Take care.
Okay.
You know, just, you know, go easy on the Washington Journal, and everything will be okay.
Thanks, Bob. I'm sending you some barbecue.
Man, I'll be waiting on it.
All right.
Later, man. Bye. Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina. And, yeah, let's try to get Laurel and LT back on. You think you got it sorted out now, Laurel?
I believe so.
Ah, very good.
Am I on now?
You are.
Oh, no, 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 no. Come on. Hello?
Yeah, yeah, you're on.
Are we there? Oh, goodness. You hear me? You hear me? I can't hear you.
Hi.
Let's see. Okay. I'm not hearing anything. How about I try you on the stress line? You can hold on for a second. I'll try and get you there. I told you last time I'm new at the Skype thing, so I'll get you on the stress line.
Okay. We'll keep trying. Because I worry when things like that happen because I wonder if I've kicked a cord or something down here. And we'll see what happens next. All right, here we go. There's Laurel. And okay, you're on the air.
Hey, Bob.
Yes.
Hey, sorry about the Skype not working out. Like I said, I'm fairly new at it, so it might not necessarily be totally up to speed on everything yet, but we're getting there.
We will. So you waited patiently and everything. We had technical difficulties and whatnot, but what's on your mind?
A couple of things. First off, I might have an answer to why the issue of climate change has sort of dropped off the radar. And it might not necessarily be an answer that anybody wants to hear, but given the fact that I followed this pretty closely over the past 3-4 years, I think it's an answer that's fairly solid. And the truth about, climate change is we may very well be at a point where it's too late to do anything about it. I mean, methane-driven climate change alone has added a full degree centigrade change to our global average temperature just since the start of 2015 alone. That's not something you're going to turn around through the political process. You could put Bernie Sanders in the White House for all that matters. You could put Bernie Sanders in the Vatican for all that it matters. You're not going to stop the total collapse of our global agricultural system by that point. I mean, we have simply initiated way too many feedback loops to think that this is something that we're going to.
Yeah, but Laurel, if that's the case, don't the people deserve to know it? And shouldn't a president be prepared to deal with it? Because that's the sort of thing that triggers mass crisis migrations, which we are not set up for, and have no idea.
Well, and trust me, I mean, you know, we've been framing this whole thing wrong since the beginning. We've been talking about this as if it were some sort of phenomenon where everybody's going to be flooded out, or everyone's going to die in a wildfire. You know, the vast majority of people who are going to be adversely affected by this, they're not going to die from coastal flooding. They're not going to die from hurricanes. They're not going to die from wildfires. What we're talking about is essentially the collapse of our food system. This is a food crisis. First and foremost, this is a food crisis. I can live for 3 months in 10-degree weather. I can live for 3 months in 95-degree weather. I can't live for 3 months without food. This is a habitat issue. And until we can shift our focus away from scientific data that people will automatically tune out as soon as they start hearing it. Once they put the onus on the fact that we could be facing the starvation of our entire planet, then maybe we can get people to focus on what's happening. Because I came across something on my Facebook page and posted onto your, you know, onto your page not that long ago, where the first thing one of their minions starts talking about, you know, debates off, very first comment is, just about 350 more rounds. This is not just a political phenomenon. Don't think that people like this are going to act out just through political means. You know, sure, there are a lot of people who might just lie down and die peacefully when the starvation hits massively. But, you know, there are a lot of other people who won't. you know, especially in places like America where the people are outnumbered by the guns. And I really think we really need to start taking this seriously in terms of not just dismissing. It's so hard to wrap my head around it because this is a frightening prospect. To just sit around here and think about things like total agricultural collapse and collapse of the monsoons and what's going to happen there, that, you know, India and Pakistan are going to make Syria look like a Sunday picnic without the food. It's hard to really be able to effectively wrap your mind around all of this and put it in a cohesive message because it's hard. I'm repulsed by doing it. It's scary as fuck. And what I want to make sure is that people can, I want to connect with people to the realization that this is beyond politics now, what we are facing. Not to say that, and that's not to diss, you know, our democratic traditions. Sure. You know, free and open democracy is a good thing. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, those are good things. But without a functioning habitat, none of those things are going to matter. You know, voting rights and abortion rights and free speech rights aren't going to matter if people are in a mad dash to, you know, find the last open grocery store within 100 miles. And I think people really need to start understanding that if they want their ideals to get to the other end of this, that they're going to, we're really going to have to start thinking in a much more practical and tactical sense. That, yes, voting for Hillary Clinton is a much better option than voting for Donald Trump. But we're still in a position right now where the vast majority of trouble we're in is not something we're going to vote our way out of. And we really start to, we need to start taking ownership of our own destiny.
Well, I mean, okay, I want to push back just a little bit, Laurel.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if we've reached the feedback loop part of the program where nothing can be done. But the purpose of a free self-governing society is to make rules for itself to perpetuate that free, self-governing society. Well, as you note, there's not, you know, the casualties of catastrophic climate change will include things like free speech and even freedom of movement. So while I understand what you're saying when you say we can't vote ourselves out of climate change, we can damn sure vote ourselves deeper into it.
Exactly.
Because the other side is hot, you know. Dipshit Donald is saying, you know, we're going to put the coal miners back to work, and of course, you know, the people in West Virginia who can't remember a time when their families were not enslaved and indebted to the coal industry say, yeah, we can't wait. Oh, we just want to mine some coal. It ain't there. It's not there in the seams necessary to provide mass employment. It's there in sufficient seams that 10 and 15 man crews can spend 5 years taking down 5,000 acres. But you can't run an economy on those kind of numbers. And, you know, Trump's hollering about we're going to help them, we're going to put the miners back to work. Well, the largest employer in West Virginia is Walmart. And Walmart workers need more help than coal miners do. They need a living wage. But back to the issue, you know, so if we burn more coal, we're going to have more coal ash, and that means more coal ash disasters. And that means more particulates in the air, and that means more CO2. And that means more climate change. So if we can't vote our way out of it, I think we have to at least acknowledge that we damn sure can vote ourselves more deeper into it.
Exactly. And again, I'm not trying to, instill a sense of worthlessness to our democratic values. I'm not. Trust me when I say that. I mean, I understand having Hillary in the White House is going to be far more beneficial to our chances of mitigating the worst of the damage than putting Trump in. It's not even close. I realize that. But we also need to understand that, you know, we're talking about a process that is going to cause deep destabilization of societies all around the planet. You know, this isn't just going to be something that's contained within Appalachia or the Midwest. This is something that is going to be felt hard in places where billions and billions of people are living on a small patch of real estate. You know, China does not have a very large growing area, considering the fact that they're feeding 1.3 billion people. Between India and Pakistan, that's not a lot of real estate to feed over, you know, 1.3 billion people. And to think that America is not going to have to deal with the effects of those crises in some way, shape, or form is being a bit short-sighted. You know, we are really going to have to be able to focus.
Well,
on,
I mean,
how to...
right, on a relative scale, Laurel, what's happening in Syria is, and I don't mean to minimize it, but it's fairly small. What happens when, you know, the Syrian migration is relatively small, and it's put more pressure on European governments than they've had to withstand since the Second World War. And that's just a few million. What happens, exactly, you know, there's 1.5 billion people on the Indian subcontinent. What happens when they all need to leave?
Yeah. It, like I said, it's just, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm belittling here, but, man, this is, you know, our survival as a species is not going to depend on what's in somebody's email account. Our survival as a species is not going to depend on whether or not gays can marry or abortions can be safe and legal. Our survival as a species is going to depend in large part in how we deal with these massive calamities that are going to be foisted upon us when billions of people start moving around because their habitats failed them.
And precisely my point, because, you know, we talked about the precious little fetuses last night, and we talked about whether or not Granny needs to work till 90 before she can have her Social Security because Pete Peterson doesn't think he's rich enough yet. We talked about those things, and we talked about the big, bad, nasty Russians and no-fly zones. And the one thing that actually presents an existential threat to the entirety of the species, nah, it went begging. So,
yeah.
you can't blame the candidates for the questions. They're on the hook for their responses to them. But they're not on the hook for what questions get asked. And so, yeah, shame on Chris Wallace.
Because it's going to be so hard to try to figure out how to create a non-thermonuclear solution to this. I mean, because like I said, I think, you want my honest opinion, the monsoon is going to fail sometime within the next 2 or 3 years. And fail totally. I'm not talking about something that's going to wait until the end of Hillary's second term. I'm not talking about something that's going to wait until 2100. This is probably something that's going to happen within the next 2, 3, 5 years. This is scary as shit, yo. This is not something.
Well, I had a note.
I can't believe people are talking about anything else right now.
I had a note from Jay Cruzen, who saw the effects of the hurricane in South Florida. He said the king tides are here, and the flooding is you know, persistent. And, you know, it'll get a little worse every year, a little worse, a little worse. And then, you know, and none of us will be around, but by 2100, there, you know, maybe 2200 at the latest, there just won't be any South Florida.
But the problem with chaotic systems is that sometimes it can get a little worse and a little worse and a little worse, and then before you know it, it hits a tipping point and it gets 1,000 times worse within the span of a single growing season. Think of it from the standing point of somebody that has heart disease. You know, they might feel a little bit worse one day, it might feel a little worse the next day, and that process might continue for 10 years, and then all of a sudden they're taking out their garbage and they drop dead. our chaotic system of climate functions just like that. To just add 1 degree of Celsius warming across the entire planet is adding a stupendous amount of energy to a system that is already chaotic by nature. I remember looking at the prediction maps for Hurricane Matthew, where it literally looked like a flying spaghetti monster because nobody knew where the hell that storm was going to go. Nobody. And to think that if a simple, self-contained little hurricane out in the Atlantic can become that unpredictable, think of what's going to happen when our spring and summer rains and the monsoons, when they become that wildly unpredictable. And that's not something that's very far off now.
Well, I mean, I see it in Appalachia, Laurel, because I describe it as the seasons being out of sync. Winter arrives later and hangs on longer. Summer acts exactly like spring. Autumn acts like summer. We just had 6 week dry after having monumental flooding in June. We had a 6 week dry spell. And I mean, like the fall colors that are brilliant when they're still not really here. You know, you got a little changing, but it was too damn dry, so, you know.
And the frustrating part is it's hard to get that message across because, you know, I can still take my dog out for a walk and the weather's mild and nice and nobody's going to complain about the weather when it's nice. They're just not, you know. And until the grocery stores start emptying out, that most people aren't going to even pay attention until it blindsides them. And this is what scares me. You know, that post that I shared with you on that Facebook page about, you know, buying 350 more rounds as a response to the debate, I didn't have to dig around looking for that. One of my drinking buddies posted it. Okay? This is a phenomenon that is right close to home. It's in everyone's neighborhood. And it's people like my drinking buddies that are most definitely armed to the teeth that are going to get blindsided by this. And what then?
Well, then they're going to start killing people.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yep.
You know, and there's so many bandit people, like-minded people like you and I and myself and everyone in the community that's hearing my voice now, that, dude, we've got to start taking care of each other. We really do. And I understand I may not have the greatest social skills. I certainly am not the most gifted in terms of, you know, being able to financially prepare for things like this. But we really need to start looking out for each other, and not just over the, you know, not just long distance relationships, but finding people in your own community that you can get face to face contact with on a regular basis. Because trust me, you know, we're gonna, like Malloy said, we're gonna need to have each other's backs through this. This is real, and this is something that we have to focus on. You know, and again, not to say that political activity is a waste of effort, because it's not, but we really need it. A major paradigm shift in the way we are thinking right now. Because
LT agrees.
There are no roadmaps for where we're going right now. And we've got to have each other's backs in order to find our way through this. Because as great as our ideals are, it's not going to matter if the people who carry those ideals don't get to the other side of this. And we need to get to the other side of this. We must. You know, and sorry to take up so much of your time with, you know, talks of, you know, Armageddon, but, you know, it's something that I've got to get off my chest, and it's been bugging me for the longest time.
That's what this is here for.
I might just be, swatting at gnats trying to collect all these ideas flying around in my head, but it's important that this gets out there. And it's, you know, it's not just about a political phenomenon. It's not just about some yahoos taking over a bird sanctuary. This is something that is going to deeply affect the lives of every single human being on the planet. And we need to start taking care of our own. It's really that important. So I'll leave it at that. Like I said, LP stayed remarkably quiet for this one. He did say hi.
Yeah, but he's gotten a couple of comments in.
Yeah. He ran off on me a couple of nights ago. I was trying to bathroom him outside, and he saw one of the neighbor dogs playing, and it was completely dark, and I couldn't see where I was going, and bam, I'm right into one of the bushes and back, and I see him about 6 hours later trotting back in, happy as a lark, so. But at least he's on base, so.
Yeah. Well, Laurel, you have yourself a good evening, and I'm glad you stuck it out, and we found a way to have the conversation after all. We'll get your Skype stuff sorted out sooner or later.
All right. Thank you very much, Bob. Take care.
Take care now.
Bye.
Our buddy Laurel and Little Thunder calling from southwest Minnesota. About a minute past the hour, the stress line is open. I'm going over to the other one here in just a minute. We got $400 to raise tonight and $200 tomorrow so as not to go into the 11th anniversary of the Horn in a great big giant hellish hole. That's one at 400, two at 200, four at 100, eight at 50, 16 at 25, 32 at 1250, and 64 at 6 1/4, and 128 at $3.13. So, if we could knock that down, that would be freaking great. It really, really would be. Carol Baker with a note to the media. Note to media. Stop saying both candidates are flawed. She's flawed. He's Hitler without the mental stability since the Hitler pool has been suspended. Yeah, without the charm. Exactly. I had a note coming in from John in North Carolina. He said, I voted today in North Carolina, Stan. I didn't even need the clothespin after the debate last night. Fuck Trump. He can suck it. I'm proud to be with her. And it seemed to people of reasonable mind that the choice was pretty obvious after last night. But I'm not going to sit there. I'm not going to sit here and do the happy dance, the happy chair dance, and say, well, you know, it's all locked up. It's in the bag. Because it ain't. There's still 40% of the American people who are going to continue to try to threaten and intimidate their way into propelling him into the White House. And that's only 10% of the of ground that they have to make up in an election system that is rigged to a certain extent. It's just not rigged the way the white wingers think it is. It's rigged against the wrong people being able to vote. You know? Yeah. So let's run over to the Skype line. You still there, Tracy? No, guess not. So both lines are actually open. Okay, we'll try this. Is that you, Billable Rick? Hello?
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 Well, hold on one sec.
Hello, Bob?
Yeah. Yeah, hi. It's Carl from Massachusetts.
Oh, hey, Carl. Good to hear from you, man.
Talked to you many times.
Yes.
The subject of global warming, I live in Western Massachusetts, just north... I've told you before, just north of Springfield, all of my trees are still green. Now, this is October. It's almost Halloween. And the leaves are still green and on the trees. My mulberry tree still is green. My sugar maples are still green. My Katsura smells like burnt marshmallows, but still kind of green. This is not normal.
So y'all had a really hellish winter a couple of years back.
The last winter wasn't bad.
No, but a couple of years back was.
2 years ago was bad.
Yeah, was it like that then too?
No. No, this is just weird. Now we've had a drought, and we're down like probably a 12 inches of rain for the season, for the year, for, you know, summer and spring, I guess. But this is just, I've never seen it like this. I have never seen a sugar maple keep its leaves green into October. I really don't know.
And you're out in Western Mass, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right around Springfield.
Okay.
I've never seen this. This is really fucking strange. I have a t-shirt on, and I'm outside.
And
no,
that's not typical, right?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. I'm 51 years old. This is not, I can't remember stuff like this. I really can't.
I mean, at least like a hoodie or a sweat, some sort of jacket, right?
No, I have a t-shirt on.
No, but I mean ordinarily.
Oh, no. Ordinarily, hoodie, I'm bald, so I'd have a, you know, skull cap on or something. But this is not normal. This is not, there's nothing, and they're predicting that we're supposed to be having a very, very cold, wet winter here, and down south you're supposed to be having a very dry, warm winter. But who knows?
Well, I counted I went with the old saw about counting fogs in August, and around here they say that if the number of fogs in August equals the number of deep snows you'll have in winter, and if that's the case, we're going to get buried.
Yeah.
We had a very foggy August.
Yes, this is just not normal.
No, and it's you know, it's not particularly cold here either. I mean, you know, warm days, cool. I mean, this is, if you kind of like the cold like I do, you can leave the window open and be pretty happy. Because, you know, it'll get down low 50s at night right now. Which in itself is a little bit strange.
Have you taken my mention of getting a heated mattress, Dad?
I actually started looking for one. If you've got one, if there's one that you particularly recommend, I'd love to know about it.
It's just there's a few companies that make them, but they're better than a heated, because the heat comes up underneath you.
Yeah,
they're better than a heated blanket.
Well, I have a feeling Agnes would like that very much.
Oh, yes.
She's much less tolerant of the cold than I.
I live in a brick house that was built in the 1850s, and I don't heat our bedrooms because it's just a waste of the heat. So that's what we have.
Wow, an 1850s brick house. That's amazing.
Yeah. And my 9-year-old loves it. He loves his master pad. His room isn't heated either.
And you just wake up in the morning and jump into your clothes real fast and run out into the warm part of the house.
No, he just runs downstairs and jumps onto the dogs, the two American Bulldogs, and he jumps on the dogs and cuddles up with them. So,
aww.
That's what he does. So,
very nice.
Also, now that I think about it, is Snork on Facebook at all?
I don't know if he's on Facebook, but he's over in the chat room most nights. I'm not sure if he's on Facebook or not.
All right.
Let me. I'm just typing a message to him now. I'm sure he'll respond shortly. Or not. I am warned, however. James just wrote in and says, the thing about a heated mattress pad, it is not compatible with foam mattresses. And luckily for me, I guess, I don't have one of those. Yeah, he's on Facebook.
Is he? How do you spell his name?
Well, I don't know what it, I don't know what his handle is on Facebook, so I'll have to wait on that.
Okay. All right. I'm on your Facebook page, so maybe somebody could forward that to me.
Yeah, okay. And by the way, you got a note from Tim in L.A. He said, tell Carl we have strange weather, too. Currently, it's 95 degrees Fahrenheit. We're on the extreme fire warning, and our trees turn green starting February.
Yeah,
I know. That would be kind of weird, wouldn't it?
Yes. All right. I took enough of your time.
Okay. Well, Carl, always good to hear from you. I'd say enjoy the warm weather, but it's kind of disconcerting, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, you take care and have yourself a good evening. I look forward to hearing from you again.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye now. Carl calling from Western Mass. And okay. Tim says, no. The leaves turn brown in February. So when do they turn green, Tim? And speak of the snork, there he is. What do you say, snork? Oh, snork.
Yes.
There he is.
Got the problem. I'm just calling in, and let me kill my other sound source. There we go. Get used to that transition. I wanted to call in about the previous caller that mentioned the problems with drink food in the Midwest.
Yes.
This is also in September, a conference was held in Australia. Australia is having the problem also. The central area in India, with about 700 million people involved, they do not know if they're going to have water for the people to remain in that area more than 2 or 3 years. That's just south of the Deccan Flats in India, which is a major portion of the world population. And in Australia, the temperature has grown to the point where they're looking at just a few years of viable crops. Here in the United States, we're looking at losing Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, Minnesota, Kansas, Arkansas.
Well, but you say losing. I mean, it's not like we're going to forget where we put it. What's going to happen?
The temperature, the plants that we typically grow there now have this window of growth. They need a certain amount of moisture, and they need a certain temperature range. We're just gradually creeping out of the range where corn grows in the southern Minnesota south. And after that point, it won't be that much good for growing food.
Well, I know. I know from my own gardening experiences, you know, you pick out this hybrid or that hybrid. There's one that a lot of people grow around here called Early Sun Glow, and it's a 60-day corn.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you want the really, and I love it, Silver Queen, that's a 92-day corn. And, I mean, you need every damn day of your growing season for it.
And a lot of these southern areas grow it in this window of opportunity before summer hits. They grow in a period of time that we don't normally think of as a growing season. But I wanted to call about the conferences for controlled environment agriculture. They're popping up around the planet. I'm actually helping a professor out of New York with this. And they call it controlled environment agriculture. It's basically hydroponics, growing food inside, and trying to increase or decrease the amount of energy that's necessary to produce one unit of food. It helps a lot in reducing greenhouse gases. You don't have to transport it as far. One of the issues is, though, as you reduce unnecessary work like transporting, a lot of people get their jobs moving things. So we are going to be facing a difficulty as we move on getting work for people. When you move something, it really doesn't change the value of it much. You know, a carrot, a pound of carrot is a pound of carrot in California, is a pound of carrot when it gets to Missouri, whatever, in the winter. But that would be much better just to have that plant already there. And the only reason we haven't done it in the past is we couldn't. But now hydroponics has advanced to the point where you can grow almost anything. And personally, I would love to talk to anyone about starting to grow coffee in West Virginia.
Say what?
Right now, if I had to pick a place where I wanted to start growing coffee, it would be in West Virginia. And it would still pay off even the water treatment that you would need to do to get the nasty stuff out of it.
How? Why?
You have a perfect environment in West Virginia for recapturing the moisture that comes off the leaves. So you could basically recycle your water to grow the coffee.
But, I mean, we don't have the climate for it.
Yeah, climate doesn't matter anymore. This is one of the side effects of controlled climate in agriculture. You put it where you want to go because you make your own environment.
And so are we talking about, you know, giant greenhouse complexes or?
Yeah, wouldn't be greenhouses like you're thinking. It'd be displaced greenhouses where they're called pink houses now because you use solar power to collect energy from the sun. Now, it's not sunny every day in West Virginia, especially at that altitude. You store energy from the amount of electricity that you gather. You really only need one third of it to supply the light for what's going into your farm. So you do have energy left over for either selling to the grid or storing for the days that aren't as sunny. But again,
but why coffee in particular?
Because it needs a lot of water. It needs a temperature range that would be much easier to hit than, say, if you try to grow coffee in Florida or something. It's always going to be too warm. You'll be spending all your money cooling to get, like I said, there's this window. Every plant has a window of temperature and moisture that it likes. So you could duplicate the slopes of Hawaii or Columbia so easy in West Virginia that it'll probably be the cheapest place to actually duplicate that.
So you're not even really using the native soils, are you?
No. Wouldn't be using the native soils, and that means that you could put the operations into areas that are going to be chemically devastated for growing things for years. In this case, just cap them off, grow over them, not in them, and avoid the contact because it's unnecessary. It's a better working environment for the people, clean. Takes less fuel to get coffee from West Virginia to New York than it does from Hawaii or Colombia.
Or Brazil, or, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating. You always bring something that because I dare say that there's not a single person in the state who is saying, you know what we need to do? Grow coffee.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's going to be something you can go out and grow coffee in your background. Again, you need these control environments, which are basically, some people are doing it in converted factories that were shut down. Some people are building facilities just for this. Some people are using shipping containers. Australia just had a huge conference here in the United States, in Phoenix, in California, in other areas where the plant physiologists are just absolutely on edge of where we are in the plant curve, temperature curve, where we just cannot supply food with tractors, you know, growing through dirt anymore.
Well, you know, we have more than a million acres now in central Appalachia that have been absolutely ruined for anything else by mountaintop removal. One of the few things that one might conceivably think could possibly grow on those moonscapes is industrial hemp. You'd never want to grow anything directly in soil on a mountaintop removal site that you were going to ingest into your body because of uptake issues.
Yeah, I wouldn't even consider the growing of the hemp there unless the hemp was going to be burned and used for heating, and the gases were not going to be or anywhere near people.
I was thinking more in terms of, you know, industrial hemp for, a fuel source, fiber source for clothing, that kind of stuff. But
skin is the worst part of your body for collecting
toxins.
Yes, because there's just so much of it. Only your lungs have more surface area. And for some reason, because of where most of us came from, or our ancestry, were areas where there was a lot of lead, and our intestines are actually somewhat lead resistant. I'm not saying they are; it's just somewhat. So you're always more at risk for lead poisoning through your skin than you are through your intestines.
Well, that's worth pondering, because you know that's one of the more bedeviling questions about this region, Snork, is. We know that we've got to do something to mitigate the wholesale poisoning of the region, and we keep looking at these mountaintop removal sites, going, you know, there's got to be something you can do there. And so we looked at, you know, industrial wind farms. Nope, can't do that because they took the mountain down out of the industrial wind speeds, and
yes.
the so-called reclaimed sites are too geologically unstable to be able to support, you know, the giant standards that the wind turbines are mounted on. So that's out.
Mm-hmm.
Much the same applies to solar, because while they seem like they're relatively lightweight, that ground is never settled. And, you know, a crevasse opens, what have you, and you know, boom, there goes a lot of your generating capacity. I remember a while back, people were going to try to plant apple trees and fruit trees on a mountaintop removal site, and then they were going to put up beehives, and they were going to produce honey. And then people began to say, well, no, I'm sorry, I'm not eating any honey off of a goddamn mountaintop removal site. We had people, and I think they're still doing it down in Logan County, who are raising Arctic char in the waters of an underground coal mine. I would not eat that fish. If it was the last fish on Earth.
If the puddles are sitting in the actual mine floor, I would agree. If they were in troughs that did not come in contact, that would probably be okay. I did a humanitarian volunteer for a river in India that was laden with heavy metals, and they needed a way to get it out of the water. You know, people just needed something to drink, and we found that growing mung beans in the water, just 2 hours of mung bean sprouts growing in the water, and basically covering an area square, that 2 liters of water with heavy metals could be 80% cleared in 2 hours with just a cup full of mung beans. And if you cut the tops off the mung beans, all of the heavy metals remained in the roots. So you had to dispose of the roots, and the top was actually safe to eat.
Wow. We've got a note coming in from Robert in Australia. He said, he asks, did the conference held in Australia have a name? I'd like to look it up. I haven't heard about it. I wondered if they discussed the death of the Great Barrier Reef.
Osfino 2016 met in, I've got a whole bunch of these. it was held September 18th through 23rd at the CSIRO Discovery Center in Canberra. Or you can, is he in New South Wales or is he?
Yeah, Robert's in New South Wales.
Is he near the town of Kealoa?
Robert's pretty much in Sydney, so.
ANU KIOLOA Coastal Campus. You can contact them and get in touch with them for the next conference.
Okay, so there's going to be another one?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. There will be more. Well, Australia is an extreme leader in the in controlled environment. They already have two major farms that make their own water. They condense from the air all their water that they use. Because they also have a farming problem there of a lot of uranium dust, which means radium, neptunium, and other things, that thorium that always go with it. One thing of the radionuclides, they're all always attractive to plants that have a lot of buds, like apples, big flowery fruit trees.
I don't know if you may have read something about this. I don't see. I don't see it here, but I ran across a story the other day that said some researchers had inadvertently stumbled upon a means of converting CO2 into alcohol. They were trying to figure out a low energy means of dealing with CO, because you know one of the big problems with CO2 is that, like, carbon capture and storage, you know, underground, it's all massively energy intensive, and you wind up spending more energy doing it than you do. That's what makes it unfeasible. But that these cats had, some process involving copper, had found a way of converting CO2 to alcohol to use as a fuel. Heard anything about that?
No. But alcohol fuels are really promising anyway. Any of these, alcohol is a nice transportable. Still, nothing beats the oil that you get from algae that you grow in sewage.
Jesus, we did talk about that.
And airplanes can run on that right now. School buses can run on that right now. Trains, ships going to sea, even generators can run on it right now. Some need a higher burn rate, a process called transesterization, which is a 85-year-old technology. There is no reason that if we didn't say we wanted a moonshot level conversion in the United States over to sewage to fuel, that we couldn't do it in 7 years.
Jesus. Well, that's the kind of vision-y stuff it would be nice to have. I mean, Hillary's saying she wants 500,000 solar panels in the next 4 years is ambitious and inspiring.
Nice. Solar, nice. I wish I could show you people. To get 300 watts of solar panel, the actual solar part of it, 3 inches by 4 inches by about 6 inches thick. That's all the silicon you actually need for that amount. And it gets laid out, you put it on a piece of glass, solder them together. It takes about 2 hours to solder all the wires together. And then you pour plastic over it. It conforms and it keeps all the bubbles out. Turn it over, and you have enough solar power to run your computer.
Wow. Robert wrote back and said, we're farming water from the air. Why isn't this on the news here?
The Australians are leaders in it. I could see if I can get him a link. It's a fantastic farm, a beautiful farm.
Well, he has found the Environment Conference invite page, and he says he sent me the link and said, I'll go from there. So, very cool. Very, very cool.
And, again...
Well, so I guess in a way, Snork, you're sort of providing a counterpoint to Laurel's argument slash fear that we can't, you know, we can't vote our way out of this. We can't legislate our way out of this.
Yeah, our biggest problem is we keep saying we can't. We keep saying, well, has anybody done it? And then when somebody says they've done it, nobody's taking them seriously. Yeah, the entire state of California, the entire state of Arizona, Nevada, they should be sending every person they've got from to go visit Australia and go over these farms that make their own water. There are portions of Australia you could not farm if you don't make your own water. And the middle of Australia is every bit as hot as the southwest of the United States.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can see where those... solar furnaces, you know, with the focused solar panels and the tower with the salt in it, and yeah, could be quite handy out there too.
Yeah, but the problem is that technology transfer grants tend to only be to huge companies. There are so many people out there that I run into that have all these technologies that could be put to work. And usually it's only the fringe crazy stuff that gets funded. And the people that actually are able to demonstrate something get going. My biggest problem is with this one right now, that is the solar roads. People immediately love the idea, break into it, and don't realize how much more energy it takes to make the solar road because of so much energy that goes into the concrete of the road. And after you've ripped up all the concrete and you've had all these huge trucks burning all this diesel fuel, rip up the road, transport it out and reprocess it, then you go back and you lay a new foundation out of concrete that you put the solar panels on, and these solar panels won't even last 6 months. It's just so infeasible when the only place you'd need a solar road is like if in the middle of New York City that there was a road that nobody used. And when I have never really been on the streets of New York City, but in my head I view that basically all their streets are parking lots. You know, the cars are only moving a little bit, but the roads are always completely covered. So there wouldn't really be gathering any energy. Most of the country, there's just an incredible amount of empty land beside the roads. And every rooftop is empty, and there is no reason that we shouldn't be powering every rooftop. Let's see. And
well, I mean, I think that's part of where the 500,000 solar panels idea goes. I remember it was years ago now when our buddy, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. Said, you know, it was his, you know, he had a dream, and it was the dream that every house would have solar panels on every roof. And, you know, that's a doable dream that Albert had. And it's only a matter of will and money. But, it's always a matter of money in a capitalist system.
Our major problems is everybody that goes on and gives some big speech, even Obama, saying, you know, We'll start developing these technologies soon. Doesn't recognize anybody that's already done it. That will, you know, someday we'll have to turn our minds to it. That treat it as though it is so far in the future that we can't be doing anything. And realistically, what we need to start saying is, well, what have we looked into? What have we turned away? What if we turned away because it made somebody else that was wealthy not profitable anymore? And more and more and more of the technology that I run into, this is the case. One conference that I was at out in Washington, D.C., when I was out there for water, was somebody that was trying to get a different type of X-ray that sees soft tissue disease, like breast cancer and brain cancer, are almost invisible to X-ray. But he had a complemental X-ray that showed that soft tissue disease, and there was actually an FDA ruling to prevent him from presenting it to Congress.
Wow.
FDA put on all kinds of rulings that he had to get, so many X-rays done, and you can tell this guy barely had the money to make it to Washington, D.C. What labs probably gave up a lot of his own medical practice in order to produce it. And since I was familiar at the time with medical X-rays for cancer, went going over with him, and I recognized that he was, being very honest about the problems of contrast in soft tissue. And when I hear somebody say that 2025, when I hear somebody say 2030, when I hear somebody say 2020 or 2050, I say, why not now? Why aren't we using all of these unemployed people out there to do something? the biggest problem with unemployment today, we have a lot of, in the summer, we have a lot of fruits that go unpicked. And they say, but nobody wants to do it. The truth is, nobody who can get their nobody who can't get there wants to get it. There is no means in this country for somebody that needs a job to get on a bus in a small town in Iowa and show up in Mississippi to take a temporary job for a few weeks. There's no means for them to live when they get there. And maybe if our country started saying, we need to identify what jobs we need to have done, we need to identify all these unemployed people, and we need to start finding ways for them to get there. Some people can't leave to go to a place because they have to stay to where they have a family member that can provide child care. Well, if there was a child care facility in an area where we need a large amount of temporary labor, certainly a lot of people would take those jobs if they could get there. Let's say that we have another group of storms somewhere, and we need a whole bunch of unemployed contractors from North Dakota to go down to South Carolina. Well, they could do that if they knew that they could get there, that their family would be taken care of while they were there, that there would be child care. And right now it's mostly just, we have to supply the means for things to get done, and we have all the technologies we need. To me, there is no reason that we have a Sahara Desert. 30 years ago, someone came up with a method for planting in the Sahara Desert using an algae. Get this from hanging around with algae people. He used an algae to create a substance called agar agar that's used for diet candy. But it also holds enough water that you can put a small amount of nutrients in it, and it looks just like Jell-O. And you put it in milk cartons, the type that have the waxy covered paper. Put that in there, and it would be enough water for a plant to live 3 months. And when it's in this gel state, the plant takes it just like it's taking water from dirt, but it's taking it from this gel along with air that infuses into it. So it was an insect-free means of providing a whole bunch of plants. And the desertification of the Sahara is because the plants couldn't grow. And basically, if we started at the coast and started working backwards, we could undesertify it and have a place where a lot of people could actually move to, be productive. And it would be very good for Europe if they started putting their solar panels down by the desert, or down in the Sahara.
Well, it's
just we're not thinking as a planet. We're not thinking, okay, we got this problem, we can't do anything. Well,
we've become quite expert at passing. You know, native communities have the rule of seven generations, Snork.
Mm-hmm.
Every decision must be taken in light of the impact on seven generations coming. We, what is largely white-driven, Eurocentric culture has made an art form out of handing all the problems to the next generation, and that's all encapsulated in the handy little phrase "kicking the can down the road."
Yeah,
as if our existence as a species is a dented and beaten up can that we're just idly, but eventually a big truck comes along and squashes it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like you're arguing, seven generations, but instead, you know, making an argument of let's have this generation do something now.
Yeah.
And you know, to an extent, I think that was also contained in John Kennedy's declaration that we would be on the moon in 10 years.
Yeah,
and
this is not as big as a problem as going to the moon.
And the lunar program, the Apollo program, fueled massive increases in technology.
We had to generate that technology for the lunar program.
Right.
The technologies that we need to start fighting science or fighting climate change are already here.
and they're more easily leveraged.
Yes. And we have we had a labor shortage in the 60s. We don't have a labor shortage now. People can be trained to build solar panels. Very easily, a one-day training and you're an expert.
Wow. Well, there's a future out there, Snork, and you're very good at pointing toward it and attaching some hope to it. Mm-hmm. But what you just said, I think, is very important. We don't think like a planet. I mean, I've got a story here that I had planned on getting to because it just made me want to bark at the moon. We don't spend a lot of time talking about places like Bangladesh, but Bangladesh is one of the most threatened places on Earth in terms of climate change. And so, lo and behold, in a giant mangrove forest that is a relatively vast, diverse ecosystem, wherein, for instance, the Bengal tiger still lives, as does the Ganges River dolphin. Well, it's 8 miles from where they plan to build a 1,320-megawatt coal plant.
Mm.
Bangladesh is building a coal plant, a coal-fired power plant, much of the energy of which is going to go where? Not to Bangladesh, but to India. And the Indian Import-Export Bank is the one that's funding it. But wait, Snork, there's more. It is possible, and it is suspected, that the U.S. Export-Import Bank has plans to finance a second coal-fired power plant nearby that's known as the Orion Power Plant. I mean, in 2016, coal-fired power plants in fucking Bangladesh are just nuts. And they're past nuts, Snork. They're evil.
Well, people don't realize how much of an industrial giant India is becoming. We're concentrating on China, but the fact is, to me, I'm more concerned with is India. We fund pretty much any plant that wants to get built in India. The United States funds get them operational. We move all kinds of. We've given away so much of our tractor market and our
Mahindra, Mahindra,
Mahindra, Tata. And all this.
Really?
And,
there's a tractor called Tata?
It's a vehicle. And there's a few.
So if you've got a couple of them sitting around in a lot, somebody walks over and says, nice Tatas.
Yes.
Great.
They have some.
Yeah, I'm going to hell. But
again, I do not think we should have provided funding of those to take part of the market of the major tractor and construction equipment companies here that are hurting for contracts.
Well, that, you know, things like that are an indication of, you know, the flaws of globalism. You know, what, mm-hmm. You know, if we're gonna fund the building of coal-fired power plants, and you know that one in Bangladesh that I mentioned, people have been killed for protesting it.
Yeah. Also, there are no rivers in Bangladesh that if you were to dilute them with 1 gallon of Bangladesh water, river water, to 10 gallons of Mississippi River water, which isn't exactly clean either. That it wouldn't still be beyond toxic levels, way beyond toxic levels.
Well, this particular plant is expected to go online in 2018. It is, of course, being built adjacent to a river, and the river flows into the Sundarbans, according to the report I'm looking at, freshwater flow in that river has already been harmed and reduced as a result of the construction of the plant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just reducing the amount of water, because what these plants do to the amount of energy you can extract from coal is not only governed by the heat of the fire produced by coal, but it's controlled by how cold you can get the other side of your pistons or your turbine. The higher that temperature difference, the better. So they have to get rid of all kinds of heat, and that's why they need to be under rivers. They vaporize water. They vaporize for just as a nuclear plant does. For every watt of power that they generate, they will generate 3 watts of steam, even for a coal fire plant. And I forgot how many watts it takes to boil water. But the amount of water that I'm guessing that a plant of that size would probably use would probably be 2 ponds 500 feet in diameter, boiling water constantly. That's how much water they'll use.
And guess what? Nearby the coal plant in Bangladesh, guess what else they're planning? Ha! A nuclear plant.
Yes.
In a place that's prone to devastating flooding from just the ordinary monsoon, not factoring in climate change. What a great idea!
And to describe the topology of the area, are you looking at a huge mountain range to the north? East and a lower plains to the southwest. You've got a fault there so bad that it created the Himalayas, and you want to put a nuclear power plant there?
Brilliant. Yeah. Hey Snork, I got a roll, but you know, every time we talk, I feel a little smarter. It's probably an illusion on my part, but I really, really do appreciate the level and depth of knowledge that you bring to the conversation.
Thanks.
So hopefully we will talk again soon.
Yeah, maybe I could find somebody that might want to be interested in trying an experimental coffee factory.
Well, see, Ron in Raleigh wrote in a little bit ago, and he said, I can see it now. How about this? Juan Kincaid and his faithful donkey Cletus picking the finest of West Virginia coffee beans. You got a straw hat, Bob? Oh, I'm all sure right. We can find one.
I'll call back sometime. Let me know if you find anybody who wants to grow coffee.
All right. Take care, Snork. Bye now.
Bye.
That's our buddy Snork. 9 minutes before the hour, we're going to work in another call here. Go there like right quick. But hey, just to mention, $400 in the hole, $600 by tomorrow night. If we could take this down some, it would be monumental, because there are bills waiting to be paid, and you know, this kind of stress doesn't do anybody any good. And moreover, this is a great way not to make it to our 11th anniversary. Just saying. So, yeah, if we could, please. Let's run over to the stress line and check in with Jim in Louisiana, Stan. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Bob. I just wanted to, man, that was really interesting. It almost gives you hope, but the thing is, capitalism is the way, because those SOBs, they want to get their money first, and they want to make a shitload of it, and they want nobody else to have anything. I mean, you know that, and I know that, I think, and most of Juan Malloy, Skype family, or Juan Malloy family know that. I mean, agreed?
Yeah.
But on another thing, a little weather information, we're in the middle of a pretty good drought. It hasn't rained in like 25 days here in Louisiana, Stan. You know, I mean, we'll go 10, 12 days sometimes, but, you know, and this corresponds to kind of what you were talking about earlier. It's, I mean, the weather changes are like bizarre almost. I mean, even the way, you know, hurricanes were taking these weird, in the last couple of years, they'll take these weird, I mean, there's no way of predicting all the time, but it's like that one that hit New Jersey. He kind of did that hook, which was so weird. And then it seemed like this one that went up along the coast of Florida, and that dropped a lot of water, didn't it? Messed them up, didn't it?
Oh, North Carolina got hammered.
See, it's weird. I mean, it seems like the news kind of ignores that. It seems like they go out of their way. Like, if you watch the weather, they go out of the way, just like you were talking about a couple of minutes ago, 15 minutes ago, whatever, about the subtle changes. And you don't think that has much effect on the environment. It has a huge effect. It has on when plants grow. I mean, the Georgia peach is famous because of where it grows, but also because the weather's just right. You just change degrees, a couple of degrees. You don't have to change it 10, 15 degrees. You know, that changes everything. I don't know why they can't. These geniuses can't see it. But...
Well, because money.
Yeah, I got it. But, maybe they'll have a Yahoo moment. It won't be too late. I already think it's too late. Maybe I'm just getting old and sick and just angry. You know, just angry. But it's frustrating because you know there's answers. I mean, just like, I forgot the guy you were talking to before, half hour, 40 minutes. All these brilliant and very easily used. And as I was listening, I'm thinking the one thing that's stopping them is somebody can't make money. That was like one of the things. Somebody can't make money off of it. So they outlawed it, basically. They said, no, you can't introduce that here. So.
It's frustrating, to say the very least.
Yeah. So, well,
but it also gives hope because, if so, you know, capitalism, the way capitalism works, you know, if somebody can figure out a way to make a dollar off of it, or preferably a lot of dollars, then yeah, it becomes viable. The solar furnaces with the salt, you know, with the salt towers and stuff, those are being built.
Yeah, but even then, the right people, the guy we talked about briefly just a couple of a minute ago, whatever, has that great project, but because he won't let it go or something, the powers that be, the 1% who want to continue to be the 1%, aren't going to let it be. You know, we'll stay with coal. We'll stay with, I mean, the stuff he's talking about sounds like science fiction, and it, from what he said, it's really not that far off. Even our governmental leaders, of course, they're bought and paid for. They're not going to dare mention that because, you know, and they're dooming their own families. That's the only ironic, well, the only joy I can find. Sick of the I am. I'm going to let you go. Another great show, Bob.
All right. Thanks, Jim. You have yourself a good evening. Talk to you later. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana Standard. It's time to get out of here. I got to go pick up Margie at work. So, thank you. On nights when it gets slim like this, huge thanks go out to those who, you know, who step up. Thank you. Thank you, Ralphs. And thank you, Will, in Chicago. And thank you, everybody, all month long who keeps all of this going. I can't say enough. I mean, we are approaching 11 years of doing this, all on your determination to maintain independent, progressive conversation. And that is a monumental testament to your determination. And for that, I, on behalf of all of the Horn, thank you. Very kindly. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.